The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
In today's program, we're going to take a little bit of an offshoot and talk about Amazon's current pricing strategy. While that might be great for consumers and maybe even great for stockholders, is this really where we want things to go?
We're also going to talk to a caller who inherited a bunch of single company stock, all of it in one company stock. And the question is, should it stay or should it go now?
That's right. So stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Answering your tough financial questions for the past 20 years. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us today as we talk about financial matters. Myself and my co-host here, we're both certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you've got advisors you're working with now or you're doing things on your own, you just want another opinion, we'd love to take your call, answer your questions regarding something in your financial world. And I tell you, it is so common that people come into our office that had bought some financial product that they didn't understand, and they come in here and we try to fix the situation, but sometimes you can only do so much. Had they just sought a second opinion ahead of time, did a little more education, a little more research, they wouldn't have gotten themselves in that position.
I mean, the second opinion could have been as easy as calling our radio show.
Seriously.
Or visiting in our office or a phone conversation with someone in our office. It could have been that easy. They didn't even have to come in. It could have been that easy.
Yeah. So if you'd like to be part of the program, if you got a question for us here at Hanson McLean, we'd love to take your call, answer your question. The number to be part of the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. By the way, feel free to make up your name, your city.
It doesn't matter to us.
Yeah.
Don't make up the question,
The facts.
But it is okay to say my friend had this situation when we really all know it's you.
Yeah. Suppose that there was an individual that did this. Yeah.
You can do that, but we all know.
It's a friend. A friend of mine. So to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, 1-888-242-6766. Also, as a reminder for those podcast listeners, you can still be part of the program. Just feel free to call that number and we will schedule a time for you to be on the program. So again, 888-242-6766 gets you on the program. And we're talking with Mark. Mark, you're with Hanson McLean.
I just wanted to tell you a little bit about myself to start out.
All righty.
The bank and I own 4 rental houses. And and plus my residence as well. And then my wife and I have some 401k money as well. So about $750,000 in 401k. And my wife and I are both 49ers in both age and fans.
Okay. What happens next year?
They have to change the name of the team.
We'll see. Anyways, my question is for an emergency fund. I guess it's a couple fold. The first thing is how much, the first question is how much do we need primarily? We've got about $30,000 in an emergency fund, but is that enough? Is it too much? I don't know.
Well,
also what?
Should I be calculating off what our income is or what our expenses are? It's one question. And also, do we both, if my wife earns money and her job, and I earn money from our rental houses. Do we need to duplicate our efforts on our emergency fund being our
This is a good question, because oftentimes you'll hear, oh, you need 3 months of income or 6 months of income for an emergency fund.
I've heard up to a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's really what the, and all an emergency fund, like when financial advisors talk about, all that's really designed to do is to make sure you have cash to meet your expenses should something happen to your employment, right?
Yes.
Either because of you get laid off, you lose your job, you got a health issue, can't work, whatever.
But oftentimes it's nuanced. So where does your wife work? Does she work for a municipality or the state?
No, she works for Delicata Vineyards, actually.
And so you've got these rentals. If your rentals were providing you with a lot of income each month, maybe you wouldn't need much at all in what, quote unquote, emergency reserves.
And the reality is,
but if your rentals are taking a bit of cash from you each month, even when they're fully leased out, then you need some emergency. But I'd also look at this not just kind of an emergency reserve for your family, but what working capital do you have for those four rentals, should two of them be vacant at the same time or three of them be vacant at the same time?
Yeah. And so
that would be a bigger concern than I would have.
So you probably need more than 30,000.
Someone skips out and destroys the place.
You had $100,000 in the emergency fund, or we'll call it working capital, that wouldn't bother me at all. Even the $30,000 doesn't bother me as being too little, because you have $750,000 in your 401k.
So you're not going to have the homes foreclosed upon.
Yeah. You might have some tax implications in getting at it. It wouldn't be the best way to get it, for sure. But
yeah, if all else fails, we've got a home equity line of credit, too.
Yeah. The problem with home equity line of credit, they could take them away. So I'd try to get that $30,000 up to at least $50,000.
Given the rentals.
Given the rentals. If you didn't have the rentals, I wouldn't worry about it. The biggest question...
Are you asking this question because you're thinking about buying more property and you're wondering if you can take those dollars, or what prompted this question?
Well, I paid off one of the rental houses. So even without paying the rental house off, I was already positive cash flow.
Okay.
So, and now that I paid it off, I'm even more positive cash flow.
What percentage, if you look at the rentals, what's the debt to equity ratio there? In other words, let's say
the total value of the rentals is.
Yeah, and what's the debt on them?
I would say I'm more than 30% or less than 30% debt.
Okay. Oh, beautiful.
And what do you owe on your home?
Nothing.
Okay. And what's the cost of money what's the average cost of money on these rentals?
About, let's say, 3.5-4%.
Listen, I get like
Mark. I don't care what
Mark,
you
do whatever you want. Not gonna matter. You've done great.
Yeah,
you've done great. Technically, you know, you should have $50,000 to $100,000 in. He's done great.
The average American. I don't care if they're 29, 49, or 79. Does not have a financial portfolio like you've got.
Yeah.
Right? So when you hear about some of these, what you need, and I have a feeling that if suddenly, and it sounds like your job, Mark, is working on the rentals?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So I have a feeling if suddenly your wife lost your job.
You could turn yourself into a handyman tomorrow.
You'll be fine. You don't have a mortgage. You've got rentals that are cash flow positive with very little debt on it.
Yeah. Don't worry about anything, Mark. All right. Worry about stuff. Okay. Just don't worry about
Don't worry about emergency reserve.
Emergency reserve.
Yeah. Worry about making sure you have the right tenants.
Yeah. Worry about your children and how they act. And I do.
Good luck, Mark. You sound like you're doing great.
He does great. Great. Great.
I know. My daughter, a few weeks ago, went back to college. Oh,
and by the way, I got a disclaimer. Sometimes my children listen to this. I love my children. I'm proud of all of them.
And my daughter, she goes to school. We live in the Sacramento region. She goes to school outside of Portland. And she was home. And then I helped her pack up her car, which is like not another room for anything. Although she does have a big dog in there. Lab mix is what she said was.
It's like a giant pit bull.
You should just be glad that that dog didn't land at your house when she...
Where do you think the dog was the night I'm helping her pack up?
But not for the school year. Yeah. It very well could have landed at your house for the school year.
But you're talking about worrying. It's like, and she gets up the next morning at 5 o'clock to drive. And I hate it.
Oh, just worrying about her?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm a mature man. I mean, you think I know.
But I remember this last winter when she was driving up there and there was skid outs on the pass. And
I think we were in the studio.
Freaking out.
Good reason.
Yeah.
She got turned around. She's a four-wheel drive. She got turned around.
That's scary.
Too icy. And she called me. She was nervous. Car slide.
Should be nervous.
Yeah. That's what I said.
That's about
turn
the time
around.
You'll stay in a hotel.
That's what I said. Here's my credit card. Go get a hotel. Nothing nice, of course.
Yeah.
Low cost.
So a hotel with something in the, with a number in the name and not a four, like the Four Seasons.
I don't think there's a Four Seasons in Redding, California,
no.
I guess. But I'm just.
But like, all right. Budget six?
To join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And we are in Lincoln Hills, California with Daniel. Daniel, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning.
Hi,
good morning,
Daniel.
Thank you for taking my call.
What can we do for you?
For taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I think I'm in pretty good shape. I just kind of like to get it affirmed. I'm a retired state employee, so I have a pension, not big. I have a little Social Security, which is not big at all because I didn't contribute for the 29 years I worked for the state. And I have enough income coming in monthly to cover my expenses. I have about $320,000 in stock. I have about $110,000 in an IRA. That's my what used to be the state deferred comp. And I got $50,000 in a Vanguard total bond fund. Then I have about another $120,000 in a bond fund with a Wed Bush. And then I have about $300 in cash between my checking account and my savings account, and I have no debt.
And what's your question for us?
Well, the cash, is that the best place at this time in the world's market to keep some cash or not?
How old are you? Did you tell us how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 83.
Have you typically had a higher, first of all, I mean, kind of going through this, like, you know, it's like Pat's like, why'd you call? When he sounds like everything looks good now.
You're 83. You just, and are you taking any of this income to live on?
I have to take what they call the minimum.
Yeah, required minimum.
Distribution.
Is less than $10,000 out of your IRA, correct?
About 7,000.
Yeah.
I take about 7,000.
So you've got 400 and let's do some math on 400. Yeah, it's, 400. You want to get that or?
I do. So if you want to go to a commercial, go ahead.
So we got about 900.
He's serious.
Did he put us on hold?
Yes.
That's hilarious.
That is funny.
I was joking. I was joking, Daniel.
All right, we're going to put Daniel on hold. We're going to answer
let's answer the question. He doesn't need to hear it.
He can listen to the broadcast.
He can listen to the
podcast, by the way.
Yeah. So what do we got here, Scott?
Here's the thing.
You got 700,000.
No, it's more than that. 6, 7, 8, about 900,000.
Yeah, 900.
So here's, investments are based on a couple things. One, what are your objectives, right? What are these dollars designed for?
Mm-hmm.
It's the first thing. Secondly, how long do I have before I need the dollars to what I want they're designed for? And third, how much ups and downs, how much swings do I want to see? Can I live with?
Yeah, and he's 83 years of age, which, by the way, at 83, you can put anyone you want on hold. There's not a lot of recourse.
That's right. That's what's funny about it, I know.
Even a radio show you call me.
That's why you're
83. These kids. I put them on hold.
Oh, he doesn't like me. Okay.
So Those are the things you look at. If he was sitting in my office, I'd actually tell him to try to figure out how to start giving money away.
Well, the real thing is, so what are these dollars? The bigger question
what are
is,
they for?
What are they for? And until that question's answered.
We don't know whether you should have that much money in cash or not. And yeah. Where did the money come from and how long has it been there?
Yeah.
Did you just inherit it? Was it? But quite Those frankly, were. If you're 83 and you've got $900,000 and you're not really spending any of it, and your house is paid for and you've got monthly pension from and Social Security, you might want to consider either setting a gifting program up for your family, your children, your grandchildren, start paying for some college education.
Or just watching how they might.
Or
gift a little now to see how they're going to spend it.
Yeah, or gift to some charities. So anyway, Daniel, if you had not put us on hold, you'd be able to hear the answer.
I like that. That's funny. One, that was a first. Do you know what? 22 years. That was a first.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Is that how long
though.
We've been doing this?
Yeah, 22 years.
Wow.
1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of the program here. Let's talk with Nick. Nick, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, sir. How are you doing today?
Great. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Yes. I have a son in college. My question is, I mean, it costs around $100,000 per year.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, should he take a student loan or should we take a home equity loan? And then there's a Parents Plus loan. I mean, which one do you recommend?
Is it 100?
What year is he?
One child, $100,000 a year?
Well, yes, sir. The tuition is around $64,000, $65,000 per year. And then the rest is living expenses, books. He's going to medical school.
Okay.
I was thinking like freshman.
Yeah, I was thinking. And then the only way you'd land there is it had to be Stanford or Harvard.
I've got a kid
or,
at a private school, and it's not $100,000.
Yeah. So how do you get there?
How much from here to completion, what's the tab going to be?
Well, it's a four-year medical school. We already paid cash for the undergrad, which was around $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a 4 years of medical school, and $100,000 per year, that'll be $400,000.
And do you have $400,000?
We won't have that. Well, what they call, we are, what's the right word? They say, you know, we have assets, but we don't have cash.
Got it. So you have the assets, but it's invested either in something that is non-cash related, real estate or property.
Can your son at this stage get his own financing?
Yeah, his own student loans in his own name?
No, actually, that's, you know, the government is very smart. Up to age 24, they don't give very much to the student. The parent has to get what is called a Parent Plus loan. And
yeah, but there's other programs out there. I mean, I imagine medical schools.
Yeah, there's other programs. I would encourage him to take out the student loans in his own name,
even at a higher rate.
In his own name, not in your name. Not in your name.
The rate is like 8%.
Yeah, I you could do it in your name, but then it's your liability. Then it's your liability.
What happens? What happens if you lend him essentially the cosigner on a $400,000 loan and ends up with some disability?
Yeah.
4 years out and can't practice.
That's
medicine.
Yours. We had a caller to the show recently that ran into that situation.
Yes, we did.
Yeah,
and so, it derailed their retirement.
I got to tell you, I know a number of doctors that became doctors through the military. Through the military.
Oh, I see. So
I just know personally, I would not.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I'd pay the higher end. I'd let the kid pay the. I could give him the money to help him make the payments. I just don't want that liability on my books. So the answer to your
line of credit.
Sure, you can do a line of credit. It's your liability. The question is not, you know, what's the lowest cost of money. It's what's the highest degree of risk.
Yeah.
So you can do a line of credit on your home, borrow the money. You got to get the lowest cost of money. It's absolutely. You're going to pledge a real property in order to get the cost of money down. Sure, that's. I'm going to agree. That is the cheapest cost of money. Also,
and if your son was our client, we would be encouraging him to do just that.
Yes,
but as you, You're not our client, but we're still, you know.
You called. If your son called and asked the question, I'd say, get mom and dad to pledge the property.
Yeah.
But the dad calls and asks the question, you say, let the kid take the liability.
We've seen people. Well, and Nick, the reality is, the reality is, we've seen firsthand people whose retirement, their financial lives are thrown in disarray at the time of their retirement because they funded so much of their kids' school loans. And then
we see it all the time. And then the kid that doesn't, whatever, you know, three quarters of the way through, something happens. The kid doesn't finish. You're on the hook. It's not,
So I think you asked about the best way to finance. Our recommendation is to look at this not just from where's the best rate, but where's the lowest risk. Balance everything with risk. That's how we look at everything, frankly, yes. in financial planning. What's the risk here? And then make a decision at that point. So that would be our
And I would encourage him to go and actually talk to the military.
Well, if it was your kid, you're saying, and you were in Nick's situation and didn't have the cash to do it, you're like,
I'm not doing this.
I'm not funding you forever.
And if you don't want to do this, then go talk to the military.
It's a lifetime dream for
you. And the military says, okay, we'll get you through medical school, but you got to promise us some service in the backside.
I mean, I know
a number of friends of mine that are well-respected doctors, that's how they did it. Military.
Well, it's an interesting. So when you look at what it costs today to get through medical school, and what's
income?
The return on that?
Yeah, it's much different than it was 20 years ago.
Almost $700,000 investment.
What, 10 years? I don't know.
What if you just took $700,000 and invested somewhere?
Wow, I think it's a little bit different. I don't think I don't think that's a fair comparison.
I understand. That's why I'm trying to draw that comparison. Yeah. I know we're talking about lives, and we need people to be medical doctors for sure.
You can't. You're like, oh, he's got heart problems. Well, have him talk to this portfolio.
I mean, I appreciate all those things.
Yes.
You know, Pat, we don't have much time left in this segment, and I was disturbed this week hearing an ad that the ad said Your home is your bank.
We're back to those ads again.
Your home is your bank. And it talked about someone said they pulled $50,000 out of their home.
On the ad.
On the ad. I'm not going to mention the company because.
Okay.
Because I'm not. I don't feel like it. I don't even know the company now I think about it. But the guys, they're encouraging pulling cash out of your home. Your home is your bank, says the guy. So.
Actually, here's the money out of your house. You actually are making your house the bank's home.
That's right.
Right?
It's the opposite.
It's exactly the opposite. If you're borrowing
your home
money,
was your home. It now was it's yours, the bank's home.
But now, no longer.
Your home's not the bank.
Your home is not a bank.
So when people talk about taking out equity, unleashing the equity, unlocking that equity in your house, that is all marketing spin. You are not unleashing any equity. You're not taking cash out of your house. You are indebting yourself. You're taking out a loan that you're personally guaranteeing, and you're backing it by your house in the event that you don't make good on the payments.
All right. So devil's advocate, and I'm the one representing the devil here.
As usual.
If I took that money out of my house and I used it as a down payment on another home, am I not unleashing some of that equity?
You are leveraging yourself up, which could work well or could be disastrous, depending on which way the markets go.
Because a lever, when you say leverage, it is a lever.
But most people are not doing that. Most people are taking the money out, paying off debts. They brag about consolidating. Look, there are times when it might make sense. You brought up a time, Pat, if you might have some other investment opportunity, you're a long-term investor, you've got good cash flow, stable job, stable career, not worried about your income coming in to make the payments.
I'm not advocating that most people should not be taking equity out of their home to buy a rental property.
We see people at time of retirement.
That's when we see them.
They come in a few years before retirement typically. Those that have huge mortgage balances have a much more difficult time of ever quitting their job.
And it isn't unusual for people to take money out of their home thinking that they are going to invest it and the investment's going south.
Yeah.
And I don't know of anyone who's been, was foreclosed upon who had a home paid off. I don't know anyone who lost their home during the financial crisis that had a home paid off. It was all those that still had loans on them. By the way, for those that listen via podcast, we could also take your call, obviously not at the exact same time you're listening on your podcast, but if you call this number, we will arrange for a time for you to be when Pat and myself are both in the studio, and we would love to take your call. So,
and before we go to the break, I want to bring up real quick our the stuff that we produce on our website, not just our website, but we've got some great articles. And of course, you can hear what Hanson McLean does here in the program. But we also have a weekly email that comes out every Friday afternoon.
We have a large learning library with lots of articles where people like yourself email us and say, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about this? Or they come from discussions that we have with people just like you on the show, where we actually give you more in-depth information about these subjects.
Yeah. Anyway, we're up against the clock. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it's retirement readiness or investment allocation, tax planning or IRA rollovers, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON is our number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766.
And you can always find us at HansonMcLean.com. Yeah.
And I lost my little sheet that I was pointing to your sheet, Pat.
What? What are you talking about?
Before we go back to the calls, I wrote an article on CNBC. I write periodically for them. But it's on our website, and it's talking about how to prepare for the next market pullback.
I read that on my Facebook feed. I look at Facebook.
I don't get Hanson McLean feeds on my Facebook.
You don't?
No.
You've got to like Hanson McLean.
I don't like it.
Well, you need to go.
I don't really like my Facebook account, frankly. I'm about to pull the plug.
My point, look, we're promoting our own business here a little bit, Scott. So,
okay.
so this was a little form of self-promotion.
Oh, if that's what you, that is, kind of covertly.
If you go to Hanson McLean's Facebook page and like it, which you should, since your name is actually in.
I should do that.
You should do that. Then.
I thought I did.
Well, then you should be seeing the feeds. Because they post these articles. I read this CNBC article on Facebook. I thought you did a nice job.
Yeah, but part of it is a reminder of how far the markets can fall. In the last 20 years, we had two major pullbacks. One, the stock market fell 45%. The other, the stock market fell over 50%, 56%, I believe it was. And so it's really about how to prepare yourself for the next downturn. Not to say that, look, we have no idea when it's coming.
And we don't know how big it's going to be.
No, I'm not predict. I don't think.
We do know a couple things. We know that this is in the top three longest.
Second longest now.
Running
we're
bull
the second
bull
longest since 1925, I believe.
And in terms of percentage increase.
According to an article in the Wall Street Journal.
And in terms of percentage increase in the broad markets, we're in the top three as well.
That's correct.
So.
Coming off, though. One of the worst financial downturns. The
understand.
Worst since the Great Depression. So put those things into context.
Yeah, and actually, if you looked at the returns after the Great Depression at the U.S. stock market, it's pretty phenomenal. But we can't live in a world where we can pretend that just because we haven't seen risk in a while, that it has gone away.
Yeah.
And we know that the further prices go up above the earnings of a company, that the greater the risk. that exist in that particular company stock.
And historically, we've seen a bear market, defined as 20% or more decline, a bear market about every 3 years historically.
And we haven't seen one for?
9 years. We could go many more years without one. I don't know. Nobody knows.
So that's a great article on our website, HansonMcLean.com, when we talk about preparing for this. How do you prepare for it, Scott?
Well, part of it is just making sure you don't have money in the stocks that you're going to need in the next 5 years. I'll never forget, Pat. I remember this was back, this was in 1999. Back then I was doing the financial reports on one of the television stations in the morning. And there was someone who worked there. I won't call out who the person is. That told me they had their money for their property tax bill was in some tech mutual fund because tech stocks were going through the roof back in 1999.
Mm.
And he told me that. I'm like, what? Well, yeah, everything's doing so well. And I'm like, dude, you need to get it out of there. I think I might have called him dude, actually.
You were a lot younger then.
Yeah.
That was almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, I had my skateboard. I rode my skateboard to the studio. Now, I said, look, I don't know. At some point in time, the music's going to stop. And if you need the money for property taxes, you don't want to bet your property tax money
on this,
on that the market's going to continue. So money you need within the next 5 years.
You want to make sure it is allocated in a relatively safe area. Short, intermediate term bonds.
Yeah. And if you need it in the next 60 days or years,
then be in cash.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing that you need to be aware of is what your exposure, overall exposure, is to any one segment of the market and what your overall exposure to the broad markets in terms of equities.
Yeah.
And what that means is...
that's why it's a good...
50%, 60%, 70% of your
portfolio. We use our Hansen McLean stress test with our clients, which does that. But you find your own tool, some way to look at your portfolio and say, how would it react during these environments? And if you haven't rebalanced, say, your 401k in a while...
it might make sense for you to rebalance.
Yeah, you might have been... let's say you had 60% in stocks 5 years ago. It might be 70% or more now.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me if you were up in the 80, 85% range.
If you haven't rebalanced.
If you haven't rebalanced.
So just a good time.
Because we haven't seen a market pullback in a long time doesn't mean that the risk has gone away. And complacency can destroy a retirement.
I got to tell you, this has been one of the most strange years as far as stock market performance. And the fact that the lack of volatility... and think about this. It wasn't that long ago that the stock market was around 10,000, right? So a 100-point swing was about 1%. Today we're, 23,000. So a 1% swing now is over 200 points. How many times have you seen this year 200-point swings? Not that many.
Scott, more than
very
that.
Very strange.
It's some of the darlings of Wall Street just remind me so much of the tech bubble all over again. Let's start with it. Amazon.
Well, you can't compare that to the tech bubble.
Why not?
Well, because it has much... compare that. All right, so some of the darlings back in the tech bubble, AOL.
Wait, I'm going to slow down here for a minute. You just said I can't actually compare Amazon to the tech bubble, which actually was a stock that started in the tech bubble. The stock
It declined, I believe. I could be wrong here.
90%.
Yeah. I think it was 91% or 89%. That's how much it declined during that time.
Right.
That's what the decline was on Amazon. Dude.
Right. So it's an older.
And it's got tremendous revenues and many different business lines.
Multiple.
That's what I mean comparing to the companies.
Yeah. Like
it's not even the same company it was.
Yeah. It's like pets.com. It's not that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Webvan, the food delivery company.
I'm going to give you that. But we've seen that Blue Apron.
Blue Apron. That stock's gotten beat up since it went public.
Oh, yes. Yes. Blue Apron. Because... this concept of delivering food to your home and then having it cut up a little bit more than when you had Webvan delivered to your house or that comes with the recipe, it is a crazy concept.
So Amazon, I love Amazon as a consumer.
All right. The Amazon, I have three children in college. They have this stuff delivered to their
of course
lockers. You have two kids in college. It is it's phenomenal. It's incredible.
I order almost everything I can
from Amazon.
And frankly, I hardly go to Costco anymore because stuff I used to get at Costco now I get it right on my phone, click click, and it's done. So I love Amazon from a consumer standpoint. It's part of me kind of wondering, is it getting to the point where it's yielding so much power? And Pat, we both read this article in the last week or two that I read it and I'm like,
we shared it with each other.
Did I read this correctly?
Because I came across it and then you came across it. And the next day at work, you said to me, did you see this thing? I said, was that just nuts? Was it crazy?
So Amazon is essentially buying market share. They want 100% of your wallet, essentially, right?
Yes. And when they buy it, what does that mean?
Well, here's what they're doing right now.
First of all, they will deliver. If you're a third-party seller on Amazon, and let's say I'm selling drones on Amazon, and I'm Scott and Pat's drone company, and we're selling drones.
We've got great drones.
We've got the best drones. And I'm selling drones on Amazon. Amazon can see which drones I am selling. They know exactly. And they know everyone that is my competitor that's selling on Amazon what drones they're selling.
They know who's buying your drones.
And they know who's buying my drones. And at one point in time, they might decide to carry exactly the same product. But they go to the manufacturer of the drones and say, I'm going to put an order in for 10,000 of these drones. Everyone else is only ordering $400 or $500 of them each. You're going to give me this price. Manufacturer says,
wow, get that big order? Sure.
Sure, I'll lower the price. Then Amazon turns around and then competes with their very own customers.
That's what they've done for a long time.
To resell because they own the information.
They've taken it to a new level. This is unbelievable.
It is. If you own a small business that is delivering products anywhere.
Here's what they're doing. Let's go back to Pat's drone example. Let's say, just to make it simple, the drones cost $100.
Okay? Correct.
Pat's selling the drones for $100. And let's assume Walmart at walmart.com are selling the same drones for $90.
And this isn't Amazon selling them. This is Scott and Pat selling them. Yes. We're a third-party reseller in the Amazon
mall. Don't lose
this
here, because this is really interesting. What they are doing now is they're saying Amazon is lowering our drone price from 100 to 90 and making up the difference themselves. So they're essentially saying we don't want Walmart to have this customer, this purchase. So we are going to subsidize it. Not just free delivery, not just squeezing the manufacturer for the price. We are actually going to offer it for less than the manufacturer is.
I am going to pay money out of my pocket and maybe lose money on this transaction.
For sure lose money on the transaction.
Well, they're not necessarily, because we don't know what they're charging the reseller is that. And the discounts are typically less than 10%.
Well, so, they're losing money by the time you do the shipping and everything.
Yeah,
there's no question.
There's probably a very high
probability. Amazon's been famous for getting into new lines and losing business.
So this is
money.
Very, you know, this reminds me of the great oil boom where businesses.
Which one?
With the Gettys.
Okay, back in the day.
And the Rockefellers. Yeah. And they were willing for long periods of time to lose money in any particular market, place, in order to drive competitors out of business. So they would go into Cincinnati and they would price their products, kerosene, motor oil, fuel oil, below the competitors for years.
And that's essentially what Amazon's doing right now.
Correct. Is it good for the consumers?
Short term.
No, it's great for the consumers
short term.
Right?
What's going to happen when they get the market share?
You drive the competitors out of the business.
Classic monopolistic power is what it is.
Yes. It is monopolistic. Now, in saying that, short term, love it. Me personally, love it. Love the ease. But there are no major competitors to Amazon.
Now that we started to see some, right? We started to see some. Costco is actually up their delivery. Walmart is actually up their delivery.
Which is the beautiful thing about free markets, frankly, is when someone comes in and they provide phenomenal customer services, the competitors either get better or they go out of the business.
But Scott, what's dangerous about Amazon?
And I waited 2.5 hours at the DMV a few weeks ago.
The danger
reminded
about,
what. Good thing the government's not controlling Amazon.
The danger thing about Amazon is the fact that they are willing to lower these prices to the point that they're losing money, and they're losing money to try to keep competitors from entering the marketplace. That's the reality.
Yeah. And I know here at Hanson McLean, we usually take calls. We spend a lot of time on this topic, but, and it's,
well, it's Thanksgiving week. You're going, there's a high probability if you're an average American, you're going to go to Amazon and click a button.
During Thanksgiving week?
Yeah.
Or at some point in time?
This Black Friday.
What do they call it for internet? Isn't it, it's a different day for the internet, isn't it? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I never bought into that Black Friday thing myself.
Oh, I can't. I hate shopping anyway.
Yeah.
I don't even like shopping on Amazon very much for that matter. I don't like shopping.
Okay.
At least like doing it on the privacy of my own home. Anyway, so let's go. Let's take some, hit the phones here. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program. And we apologize for keeping Eric on the phone hold for a while, but let's go to Eric in Fairfield.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to ask you about my situation. And I recently inherited common stock all in one company, and it became 1/3 of my new net worth.
Okay.
So I feel like I should diversify out of it. But if I were to, like, for example, sell it all, there's $180,000 in capital gains since the date of the inheritance. So
when did you inherit this?
Pay a lot of, when?
Yeah.
It was in the beginning of last year.
And how much did you inherit? What was the value at that time?
$700,000.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's up about what the market is, probably. Yeah. A little bit better than the market.
Yeah. It's all one stock.
So you have a third. What company is it?
Johnson & Johnson.
What's your overall income?
The reason we asked, I mean, if it was some like younger company that had one small business line, that's one thing.
What's your overall income?
It would be $120,000.
Pat, what would you do?
So it's a third of your net. Is it a third of your net worth, or is it a third of your investment portfolio?
I would say investment portfolio.
Okay. So, and are you maximizing everything you can in terms of putting money into 401ks and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Okay. What would I do? That's a great question,
well,
Scott.
You probably would have sold it when you inherited.
Probably would have sold it to put a diversified portfolio together.
Not Eric,
it's too late
we're
now.
We're not trying to beat up on you, but that would have been the time to do it.
Yeah, and you would have bought the more broadly diversified portfolio. I'd probably split the difference. If I was charitably inclined,
I would.
But here's my feeling about. I can just tell. So we have clients that are just solely focused on the tax. Like, I don't want to pay any taxes. Don't want to pay any taxes.
Yeah. How many times have you seen?
And I've seen people overstay their welcome so often because they don't want to pay the tax.
Whether it's on individual stocks or stock mutual funds
or real estate or even a diversification in their portfolio. I would rather, and we'll manage to clients' expectations. If the taxes is the biggest driver, we'll manage to minimize the taxes and let them know about the risk that is compounding in the portfolio. What is the amount of this total value of the Johnson & Johnson shares today?
Almost 711,000.
Okay, so your investable assets are 2.1
today.
Yeah, so your investable.
So this stock has done better than the market over this period of time.
So your investable assets are around $2 million. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. So if I came to you today, I was your investment advisor, and you came into my office with $2 million, and I said, "Hey, Eric, I'm awesome. You're going to love me. But here's what I want you to do. I want to take a third of your portfolio and I want to buy a single issue company stock." What would you do? Would you take my advice?
Okay, that's pretty risky.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the answer, right? Is that were you well served by this? Yes, but at a risk because it is a single company stock. I would have the position today.
At a minimum.
I would have the position today at a minimum, and then I'd revisit it every probably 6 months. And my goal would be to get out of that position. I would probably just get rid of all of it.
You're saying that, Pat, and I'm thinking I
would get rid of it. All of it.
Because we've sat on, not only have we had our own life experiences, everybody has. We've all had our own life experiences. But we've had experiences of hundreds of other people's financial lives by their advisors. So we.
Oh, I saw one.
We see it all.
I saw one, Scott, that lady had been gifted some .com stock in 96. Was worth $100,000 when it was gifted to her. Wrote it to $3 million.
I wrote it back down
to $35,000.
Oh.
$35,000. A whole time I was saying, don't want to pay the taxes. We're just going to wait till it doubles one more time.
Now, Johnson & Johnson, it's a different
great company.
But it doesn't mean it's going to be a dominant market leader going forward.
Yeah. It's a family corporation.
And, of course, the retail distribution, that whole model.
Yeah. I'd get rid of half of it. At a minimum. If it was in my portfolio, I'd get rid of all of it.
Yeah, I'd pay the tax and move on.
Yeah,
and just be. If the fact is, this stock has outperformed the broad market since that time. And I haven't done the numbers, but I have a feeling if I sat and did the numbers and calculated, if you sold it, paid the taxes, where you'd be, it's probably the same as if you just had sold it the day you got it without any tax and threw it in the S&P 500. My guess is it'd be about net the same, but now you'd be actually further ahead because your cost basis, if you repositioned today, would be at current market value. You wouldn't have any embedded gain, which you would have had otherwise.
And if you were charitably inclined, then put together a gifting strategy for a portion of
some
this.
Some portion of it, yeah. If you gift $500 more a year, this the stock should be had. And you can actually say, let me set some money aside today in a donor advised fund, take the tax deduction off that, and avoid the capital gain.
Which is what we do oftentimes when we're with our clients.
If they're already doing some gifting.
If they're already charitably inclined.
So, anyway.
Does that help, Eric?
Hopefully that helps you some, and wish you well.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Would you say, like, I'll do it all at once, or could I do it over a timeline?
Yeah, you could do it. You could put stop loss orders on it, too. But
that doesn't guarantee you're going to sell it at that either.
Yeah, I would just do it all at once.
If it were me, I'd do it. And by the way, as soon as you sell it, it's going to go down in value. What happens in life.
It's going to go up in value.
I'm sorry, it's going to go up. You buy a stock, the next day it goes down. Always.
You sell a stock, the next day it goes up.
Always. It just happens. Not really, but I mean, it certainly feels that way, and oftentimes that does happen.
But it's behind you. Just think about it. If an advisor came to you today and said, take a third of your portfolio and buy an individual stock, you'd never actually take that advice, and that's what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah. That's exactly what you're doing. So I'd move on.
Glad to call there. There's our opinion, and hopefully you'll...
That's a nice little inheritance.
Yeah, you know,
my guess is someone in his family worked at Johnson & Johnson at some point in time.
When you inherit assets, if it's just a basic inheritance, not through like a bypass trust or some other sort of irrevocable trust, but if it's through a revocable trust, most of the time the way people inherit assets, when you inherit assets, it gives you a great opportunity to diversify without any tax implications. I mean, that's really the best time to do it is right at the time of inheritance, within a few weeks, a few months or whatever. But the longer you wait, then the more challenges you set yourself up with.
Well, we are about out of time on this program, and a couple things I want to make you aware of. First of all, if you haven't been to HansonMcLean.com in a while,
please visit. We've redone it.
There's lots of great articles on there. There's some videos on there. There's some webinars on there. We've done this radio program for over 20 years, 22 years, in part to help educate and empower people. We believe that an investor, the more educated they are, the more power they have in making wise choices for themselves. Right?
Yes.
Which is part of the reason we've
done
this.
The more informed you are in your decision-making process, the greater the probability you'll make good decisions.
Yeah. And now we realize that when people hire financial advisors, they are in part outsourcing that work to somebody else so they don't have to deal with it. We appreciate that. But these are huge decisions, and it's important that people have some basic knowledge of what is going on and what the decisions are so they can make the best decisions, which is why we do this radio program. And our website is a similar kind of approach. There's a ton of great information on there on a variety of different financial subjects. And so if you are trying to figure out anything really regarding your finances, go to HansonMcLean.com and spend some time there. And we think you could.
Yeah. It's easy to understand.
If you've yet to meet with a Hanson McLean advisor,
and you're within 5 years of an expected retirement date,
just come talk with us.
If you talk
to anyone who've met with us before,
it's low key. We try to educate, give solutions, help you out. Do we hope you hire us at some point in time? Absolutely.
If you're nice enough,
we hope you hire us at some point in time. But our goal, the reason our company does well, is because we try to help people.
Yeah.
Yep. And while you're at the website, sign up for our podcast. We've been doing this program. Pat and I have been broadcasting over AM radio for 22 years.
Has it been that long?
Yep, 22 years. And, of course, podcasts weren't around 22 years ago.
No.
And if you're like a lot of people now, when you get in your car, if your car is in the last 4 years or so, your phone will integrate.
And you can listen to the...
and more people
on Bluetooth
are turning off the radio. I wonder how SiriusXM's doing all that. I used to subscribe, I no longer do.
Anyway, we are out of time. Make sure you tune in next week at the same time. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.